Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Avery by Kat Savage, narrated by Alexander Sendes and Samantha Summers. Breaking up was easy in the 90s. Avery. I'm having an out-of-body experience, though it's nothing like how people describe. I haven't floated out of my body up to the ceiling. I'm not looking down at myself helplessly, watching events unfold. I guess I would describe it as a cross between an out-of-body experience and the angel devil on my shoulder. Except there's no fucking angel. It's like I'm sitting right beside myself, laughing at myself, and thinking about spilling the drink in front of me for shits and giggles. Natasha sits across the table from me and myself, the only real thing in focus in the restaurant. The people and sounds have all faded, gone blurry, as she breaks up with me. Because she thinks we're in a relationship, but I don't have the heart to tell her. To paraphrase most rappers, that we be fucking, and that's it. So maybe I don't have a heart at all.
I just don't think we're right for each other, she explains. I'm not sure we're bringing each other the happiness we both deserve.
Her words are about as kind as a breakup can get. She's being generous on my part, and I think we both know it. But Natasha's sweet, probably too sweet to be with the likes of me. I don't think there's a mean bone in her body, and I certainly won't make this worse by being a dick now. I understand, I say, taking a drink of the lemon water in front of me. I didn't order alcohol when we were seated. Natasha doesn't like it when I drink, and I respect that, but now I wish I had.
Maybe we're just too different, she adds.
Probably, I agree, and you deserve a lot better. Her eyes begin to rim with salt water, and I avert my attention. I don't want to see that. Don't be sad, I say, reaching across the table to take her hand in mine. It's going to be okay. You'll see. I met Natasha at the tattoo shop about 3 months ago. Do I have a reputation for sleeping with clients? The answer, unfortunately, is yes. I don't mean to. They just make it so easy. Okay, that's a dick thing to say, even for me. What I mean is I fulfill a fantasy for them, and I don't mind. She pats the top of my head and says goodbye, then briskly leaves the table. I guess I'll just sit here and eat by myself like some weirdo. Oh, and I'll pick up the check, too. Rude, but I probably deserved worse. In the past 3 months, Natasha and I had been on maybe 3 dates, though I never called them that. She did. The rest of the time consisted of me going over to her place for movie nights late after work. She was rebounding off some college sweetheart jock dude with skin more delicate than her own. And me? I was the grungy tattooed guy with the long beard and no problem fucking the memories of him out of her. I'm not sure there's a single surface in her apartment we didn't leave ass prints on. Oh well, on to the next. I finish my meal and order a slice of strawberry cheesecake to go. I'll eat it sometime around 2 a.m. when I wake up with a sudden urge to have a snack. It happens more nights than not. My phone buzzes in my pocket on the sidewalk outside the restaurant just before I turn toward my truck. Hawk, you're needed tomorrow. Me, for what? Hawk, your favorite. Huh, my favorite at work? On what's usually my day off? I think on it for a moment before texting him back, my mind drawing a blank. Me, just tell me, fuckface. Hawk, bachelorette party. Perfect timing. It's just the sort of shenanigans I need after tonight. Hell, it's the sort of troublemaking opportunity I need in my life once a week, but I'll take what I can get. I confirm the time I'll be in and start up old Loretta. Yeah, I'm that fucking guy. My rusty-ass truck's name is Loretta. I've had her for 10 years, and she was someone else's for 10 years before that. She's old and perfect and serves as my first test for a woman. If they don't like her, I can't fuck with them. I know what you're thinking, typical guy with an old truck doesn't want love. And maybe you're right. But I've got layers, lots of them, and it's going to take more than a flirty woman in a flowing floral skirt getting a hip tattoo to capture my attention. What can I say? I'm the monster they make of me. The gravel driveway crunches under my tires as I pull in and cut the engine. Aside from the barking, all I hear is the chorus of cicadas at the tree line. I might work downtown in a busy area, with people bustling up and down the sidewalk at all hours of the day and night, but when I retreat home, all I want is the quiet crackling of the fire pit out back, the comforting reassurance my dog gives me when she lies at my feet. Hey, girl, I say, pulling the key from my door and leaning down to greet her. Vega puts her head in the palm of my hand as I ignore the emotion I feel about her aging. It seems like only yesterday she was a sprightly puppy. Now the first few gray hairs are beginning to show on her muzzle. In the kitchen, I flip on the overhead light as I fish out a bone from the canister on the counter and toss it to my girl. Then I pull a beer from the fridge, twisting off the cap and flicking it into the trash on my way out to the back patio. Vega follows at my side, her loyalty never waning, happy as pie with her treat. Dogs are easy. They want love, treats, and a little exercise. And it doesn't matter how long you're gone, they love you when you return. It's women I have an issue with. So many emotions and thoughts and feelings. I wasn't raised like that. We didn't hug or kiss in my house. There were no bedtime stories, no family dinners, and we sure as hell didn't discuss our feelings. Honestly, I was lucky if I escaped the day without my father teaching me a man's lesson, aka using me as a punching bag. So really, it's not that I don't want to find love. To find a woman to fill this little house with something more than silence, it's more like I just don't think I'm cut out for that kind of thing. What have I got to offer? Nothing good. The other me laughs from my side. Nothing good at all.
Stressed out. Helena. No one I know does anything simply. They don't have small gatherings. There's no such thing as a quiet meal. And they sure as shit don't meander through life's decisions with any sort of humility. So, when my sister, Blythe, said yes to her boyfriend's proposal, I knew I was in for one hell of a list of wedding and bridal events. This weekend is a bridal party and bachelorette combination, complete with a road trip up a couple hours north to get tattoos. Why did we have to leave Nashville, drive nearly 3 hours to Louisville, all cramped in a limousine to make this happen? Because Blythe couldn't just book a group appointment for our tattoos. No. She insisted we pay to have the entire studio shut down for us. Fancy, right? And because we're on our way to get tattooed, no one in the limo is drinking yet. But we've got a whole case of champagne for afterward, and my sister has enough sparkling water to drown a mule. She doesn't drink. Not anymore. And I'm proud of her for it. She doesn't stop others from enjoying themselves, though. Needless to say, being around these women without the numbing effect of alcohol to make them more entertaining is getting to me. I think I'm going to sleep with one of the strippers, Sandra says, giggling. Oh my god, gross, Victoria scolds. This has been going on for 2 hours. Thank God we're almost there. I love Blythe. Love her to death. But her other friends are annoying as fuck. They made the cut from her party days. Not too many survived, honestly, so I don't give her too much grief over the ones who did. As her maid of honor, I've been tasked with kicking people back in line when they step out and making sure Blythe doesn't do anything stupid. And I was assigned this for one reason. My resting bitch face is top-notch. Monroe, her security specialist fiancé, isn't even worried. When we pile out in front of the entrance of a downtown hotel a half hour later, I'm relieved to feel fresh air on my face. The cloud of expensive perfume was beginning to overwhelm me. In total, including the bride, it's a party of eight. I don't know most of them. And we're either on a first-name basis or simply aware of one another due to our social circles. And based on how they act, I'll be keeping it that way. All right, ladies, Blythe calls out over us. We're going up to the penthouse, freshening up, and then we're due at the studio in 1 hour. Her excitement is enough for me to be happy today. That, and the ink. I haven't gotten a new piece since before our father died. I'll happily add another to my small collection. After what seems like a never-ending line of teasing and hairspraying, we're finally ready to go. And for the record, after listening to these women discuss the tattoos they want to get, I'm frightened. I'm not sure any of them have given it much thought, except for my sister. One of them is planning to ask the artist to pick something for them. Another says she's blindfolding herself to choose one. Apparently, this is what they call living in the moment. And apparently, I'm not built for that. We arrive outside of a building about 10 minutes later, the sign overhead reading, Bird's Eye Tattoo Studio. The logo is a bird skull, so that's fitting. The other women and I stop in our tracks as a man walks out to greet us. And by man, I mean a god disguised as a man. And by man, I mean, damn, that is a man right there. His presence has silenced the flock, a magic trick in itself. Okay, I lied. He's not a god. He's definitely the devil with a bag full of tricks.
"Welcome, ladies," he says. "My name is Hawk, and I'm the owner of Bird's Eye. We've got a real fun night planned."
The bride-to-be steps forward to shake his hand, thanking him for his willingness to play host for our group. His pearly whites flash, mesmerizing us all. A petite blonde woman steps to his side, and he introduces her as his wife, Drew. There's an audible shared sigh as we all step into the studio. Of course, a man like that is married. To be fair, it's not like I was sizing him up for myself. I find the notion that people believe that you can't just genuinely admire an attractive person absolutely stupid. It doesn't mean you want to jump their bones, it just means you have eyes and you see them. The ladies all begin meandering around the rows of flash on the walls, flipping through designs. We were told they have four artists, three residents, and a guest artist to help out. Four of them and eight of us means two rounds of tattooing. Not too bad. They've also brought champagne out for us for after our turns. After we talk Blythe out of getting Monroe's name tattooed on her, and one of the girls blindly chooses a bunny rabbit, the first four are seated and ready to go. I choose to go in the second round, wanting to give my ideas a little while longer to marinate in my mind. It's tough deciding, but not for lack of options. I keep a rolling list of things I want in my head, but when it comes time to decide what to do next, I get stuck. The familiar buzz of a tattoo gun roaring to life sends a chill up my spine. I love that sound. It's practically intoxicating. I decide to take a stroll past the artist's booth, hoping to get a glimpse of how they work so I can pick the one I connect with most. The owner, Hawk, is quiet and focused, while the woman he's working on just keeps talking and talking. She's also twirling her hair every few minutes. Drew is across the room, looking unaffected. I bet they're secure in their relationship. They're no doubt used to the attention he garners. The next guy is probably the guest, as his space looks less cluttered and there are no personal items like the others. His name is scrawled on a piece of paper rather than on an artistic sign like the other booths contain. Jericho. To me, his name sounds like he should be wearing a cowboy hat, sporting a large gold belt buckle. His slick black hair and green eyes are quite captivating, though. A guy named Hansen is next. His chin-length hair is wild, and he keeps the front of it pulled back in a small ponytail. His beard is short but thick. Of all the artists, he's the most talkative and personable. He laughs, and it's electric, infectious. The last guy, well, I can barely see his face. He's got a rather full beard, much longer than Hansen's. His ball cap is turned backwards, and he's hunched over in concentration. He doesn't seem to be talking to Victoria at all. I search his booth, stopping at the sign that says his name is Spider. Odd. He doesn't look like a spider. You look at Hawk and think, okay, yes, that's Hawk. At least I did. But I look at this guy and his name doesn't fit. Though I do like his booth, he has some of his own artwork displayed and it's impressive. This, coupled with his lack of interaction, is intriguing me. It seems I've chosen my champion.
Wait a minute, Avery. Despite not speaking the entire time I tattooed this woman, she still slipped me her number on a dollar bill she added to the tip. She quite aggressively shoved it into my jean pocket herself. Brazen, I know. I don't even remember her name. All I know is her confidence is next level, and I respect that. We'd take a little break between finishing up our first set and getting ready for the second. So for 10 lovely minutes, I slip back into the office, chug half a bottle of water, and press my eyes shut. I'm not feeling it today. I have no interest in flirting with these women. I thought I would. I really did. Don't get me wrong. Collectively, they're beautiful. I'm sure I could convince any one of them to come home with me. Well, except the bride. Drew knocks on the door.
Come out from hiding, she says. Time to stab the next one.
One last big inhale through my nose as I exit, only to blow it out as soon as I approach my booth. The blonde woman standing there runs her delicate-looking fingers over a painting I did about 2 years ago. Do you like it? I ask. She spins on her heels, clearly startled by my presence. Sorry. Didn't mean to make you jump, I say.
No, it's quite all right, she says. And yes, I do, very much.
I take another look at the painting. Bright shades of red and blue, mixed with a little purple, make up something resembling an anatomical heart. Though, as an artist, I can't seem to look past its flaws. And what I'd do differently if I were to paint it now. Thank you, I say, pausing for her name.
Helena,
she says. Well, thank you, Helena, I say, smiling. Please, have a seat. She sits and leans back into the tattoo chair, adjusting a few times until she's comfortable. So, I start. What are we getting today? I watch as she bites her lip, not in a sexual way. It's sort of like she's biting the side, causing the entire bottom half of her face to shift. It's not sexy, but it's definitely cute. Women often try too hard to make sure their actions are appealing visually. But when they don't, those are the moments I truly enjoy.
I'd like to get lavender. Like a small little blossom of it, she says.
All right, and where? I ask. She looks longingly at her arm for a moment, then says on her back, below her shoulder blade. The way she glazes over makes me think that's not actually where she wants it, but I don't push. I rarely try to talk clients out of these kinds of decisions. Now a guy comes in and wants a unicorn on his bald head. Yeah, we're having a little chat. This woman is proper-looking, in a silky white button-up blouse. She's dressed much differently than the rest of the women in her party. She slowly reaches up, unbuttoning the first pearly snap at her neck, then the next. I'm mesmerized as I watch, trying my best to keep a stern, professional expression. But I'm so surprised by what I see beneath the clean white edges of her shirt, I almost drop my jaw. From beneath her full breasts all the way to the edge of her pants, she's covered in various tattoos. Several more can be seen coming around her sides. Wow, I say. I didn't expect that. She laughs.
Yeah, I have them where I can.
Meaning? I ask.
Meaning, for the sake of my career, I can't have them on display for less intimate eyes.
She says. I get that, I say. Lots of people come in and can't have them for their jobs. As she settles on the edge of the flat surface of the chair, rolling her back toward me, she sighs.
I'd hardly call it a job. Or a career, even.
What do you mean? I ask.
At this point, it's a way of life. Who I am. My destiny.
She says. Whoa, deep. Silence falls over us as I place the stencil and get her approval. Her back has less ink on it than her front. Seems she's just getting started back here. As the needle hits her skin, a fellow partygoer peers over the edge of my booth.
Oh my god,
the woman giggles.
I can't believe it. The Helena Davenport has tattoos.
The Helena Davenport. And this sounds like more than general teasing. So I flip through the Rolodex in my brain to see if I recall her name. I'm a vault of news articles, random facts, and other useless encyclopedia babble. Davenport. Davenport. I'm fairly certain I recognize it, but from when or why, I'm not sure.
Yes, yes,
Helena replies, laughing.
Take your paparazzi photos and go. They should fetch a fair price.
The other woman laughs, and it's obvious it's a joke, I think. But paparazzi? Who the hell am I tattooing right now? I make several more lines over the stencil on her skin, and then it's time to switch to purple ink. Wait a fucking minute. The answer explodes in my brain, and I've got it. Davenport? I repeat, or rather confirm.
Yep,
she says, as if she knows I've realized. As in Jeffrey Davenport, the investor? I ask.
As in my father,
she confirms. Now I remember. An article about his death, mentioning that his two daughters would be dealing with his affairs and taking the reins. Holy fucking shit. This woman is like one of the richest people in America. And internationally, for that matter. I keep a steady hand as I shade her lavender. Her status changes nothing in my world. I still have to give her a stellar tattoo, though I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a tiny bit more pressure. I'm sorry for your loss, I whisper.
Thank you,
she says, her voice sounding a tad shaky. I hope I haven't upset her. Perhaps I should have kept my recognition to myself? Hansen interrupts the moment.
Hey, you and Natasha want to get some drinks after this?
Oh, right. I haven't had the chance to tell him. Nah, man, Natasha and I aren't seeing each other anymore. But I'll get that drink. Bummer, dude, he says. I shrug. It's no great loss. It's fine, man. Helena immediately chimes in with,
I'm sorry for your loss.
And if I could see her face, I'd swear she was smiling. Near a giggle, even. Yeah, trust me, it's fine, I offer, laughing.
What happened?
She asked. And while I can't tell if she's genuinely interested or just desperate to change the subject from her father, I oblige. Nah, nothing really, I tell her. We were in different places.
Meaning?
She asks. Meaning she was in a relationship and I wasn't. I didn't take what we were doing as seriously as she did, I admit.
What were you doing?
She asks.
On second thought, never mind. I'm sure I can guess what you were doing.
Hey, I say. Don't judge me. Helena laughs more deeply this time, and it's a pretty laugh, genuine and melodic.
Trust me, I'm not.
Yeah, well, I'm fairly certain I make a better friend than a lover anyway, I say. As a friend, fiercely loyal, can always call me in a bind and I'll always make time. As a lover, I forget dates, I don't take it seriously, and I almost always disappoint in some way or another. She seems to mull this over for a second.
Well, then can we be friends?
I laugh. Sure, why not? We'll be the socialite and the simpleton. Not quite a crime-fighting duel, but sometimes we can solve the entire New York Times crossword puzzle without cheating. She laughs again.
Perfect.
Party like a rock star. Avery. This evening's work event turns into a full-out party, as the bride-to-be and her party has generously invited us all out for drinks on their dime. It's not something we usually do, but everyone got along so well, and Drew and the bride keep babbling on about wedding stuff, so we threw caution to the wind. As predicted, two of them are laying it on thick, inviting me back to their hotel suites. They even go as far as to mention their willingness to share, but I'm not interested. They're hot, but their personalities leave something to be desired. They remind me of the wicked stepsisters in Cinderella with all their bickering and nasal whistling. Helena, though, she's a different breed. In my opinion, she doesn't even fit this crowd. I suppose she's along for the ride, given her sister is the bride. Aside from some similarities between the two of them, the rest all feel alien to me. Or perhaps Helena is the alien. I can't be sure. I watch her finger the rim of her glass across the booth from me, her dedicated middle finger circling round and round. She looks deep in thought, despite the blaring music and loud chatter all around us. The rest of the party has gone out to the dance floor, Hawk included. He must be having a hell of a time because, as a general rule, he doesn't dance. Penny for your thoughts, I finally say, cutting through the fog and bringing her into the present. She lets out a deep sigh.
So much on my mind.
Yeah, I gathered that. I laugh.
Just trying to make business decisions in my head while also having fun at a party in a club I don't want to be at.
She retorts, laughing. Are you worried about the new bill on the Senate floor this week and what it might do to your investment portfolio? I ask. If Helena had been holding something in the air, she might have dropped it. Her jaw slacks open, eyes wide.
Yes, I am.
Don't seem so surprised. Ha! I laugh. A person can be smart and tattooed, I say. Case in point. Except I don't point at myself. I point at her with the bottle of my long neck. I now know what lies beneath that buttoned-up exterior. The tattooed curves and valleys and slopes just beyond that silk blouse.
Touché, she says. For the record, I never doubted you were smart. I just didn't expect you to be smart about aspects of my business.
Fair enough, I say. But a guy needs hobbies. We both start laughing, cutting the tension a bit. Helena Davenport is far and away much easier to talk to than I ever imagined, judging by her television appearance. In the public eye, there's none of this. I'm not even sure I've seen her smile during an interview. As soon as I recognized her in my tattoo chair, my mind began flipping through news headlines, trying to recall when and where I'd seen her outside of the announcement about her father.
But, she says, I'm not sure the board would agree with you.
What do you mean? I ask, downing the last swig in my bottle.
I mean, they don't think I'm capable,
she says, teeth a bit gritted.
I mean, they think a man should be running the company.
There's disdain in her voice, an edge of anger now. Get out of here, I tease. In the 21st century?
The entire board is composed of men no younger than 65 or 70, she says. They've even not so casually hinted at me getting married to someone more fit for the job.
Wow, I say. Sounds like you need a new board. Helena snorts, shaking her head.
I'm working to refine a few bylaws that would have the better part of them resign, but that sort of thing takes time, more time than I have.
I'm sure if you keep working as hard as you are, you'll prove it to them, I assure her.
Perhaps,
she says, her voice trailing off. I can see it on her, the slow sink back into where she'd been a little while ago, far gone from here and fun. You want to go somewhere quieter? I ask. It seems like you need it. Helena looks out onto the dance floor, hesitant for a moment before realizing her presence won't be missed. Neither will mine, for that matter. The wicked stepsisters have moved on to easier prey in the form of two frat boys on the floor looking for thrills.
Can you take me back to the hotel later?
She asks. Of course, I say. Helena gathers her purse from beside her, pulling out a wad of cash to leave for the server, then slides out of the booth. I push my empty bottle toward the center of the table where the others are collected, and then slide out myself. The club is a bit crowded, so without much thought, I hold my hand out, inviting her to take it so I can lead her safely through. To my surprise, she takes it without hesitation, and a few moments later, we're on the sidewalk, free of the entangled people. For a few more seconds, though, our hands don't come apart, until all at once we realize it and laugh. I called for an Uber, I say. Should be here any second. She nods.
Where are we going?
Do you like ducks? I ask.
Ducks? She laughs. Like quack quack?
No, ducks like moo. I laugh. Of course quack quack ducks.
I'm gonna pretend that didn't happen.
She laughs.
And yes, I like ducks. Feeding them, eating them, whatever.
If I had liquid in my mouth, I would have spewed it everywhere. The comment catches me so off guard, I laugh harder than anticipated. Okay, well, please don't eat my ducks, wildling, I say. They have names and everything. I open the door to the Uber that pulls up a moment later, and she slides in, but not as far as I expect her to. Rather than sitting on the other side, I would swear it's more like she's in the middle, or at least a little more to the center than not. Does that even make sense? I stop taking mental measurements long enough to realize we're touching a little bit. She's not leaning into me or anything, but our thighs rub against the others as the car shifts and bounces. For the record, I say, I'm not taking you to feed my ducks just to get you to my house or anything. I just thought you'd be the type of woman to appreciate a man's ducks. She laughs.
Well, thank you for the honesty. I do have an appreciation for ducks. All ducks, big and small.
Oh, don't worry. My ducks are big. I have big ass...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?